Well, I just want to welcome everybody today to the Entrepreneur Show, and I am truly excited to interview my next guest. My name is Heidi Richards Mooney. I'm the founder of Women in E-commerce and today's host. Let me tell you a little bit about Stacy Blanchette. She's a fashion designer, senior fashion editor, writer, author, and film producer extraordinaire, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. Her first business, aptly named Your Own Girl Friday, was developed as a full-service concierge-style platform that catered to personal clients and professional businesses with all types of needs. In 2012, with Your Own Girl Friday in full swing, Stacy decided to pursue her dream of becoming a fashion designer. You and I have a lot in common, Stacy. Thus, Blanchette Designs was born. She held her first fashion show for charity on September 23rd, 2010, and the rest is history. In her first 2 years, she designed dresses for 2013 Oscars and Grammys for a red carpet sweep. Wow, we need to talk about that. During the launch of Blanchette Designs, she decided to enter into the writing and publishing world. Stacy published a small ebook titled Romantic Encounters in 2012, which to date has sold 400 copies. With her magazine contacts firmly in hand, she set out to explore her journalistic side. She picked a fashion photographer, artist, magazine publisher, and a filmmaker to interview over the course of a year and a half. To date, her interviews have been featured in 22 magazines worldwide. Again, we have a lot in common. Not the same world necessarily, but the same type of path, if you will. Stacy's life story, The Journey to Myself, was released in July 2012 and won an award of merit from the Indie Film Festival and was an official selection of the Cinefest of Las Vegas 2012. Today, Stacy's going to share some of the highlights of her fascinating life, why she decided to become an entrepreneur, and what's next for her. Welcome, Stacy.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, I'm thrilled. You know, I was looking at your bio and trying to figure out how to make this a very simple introduction. And there was just no way because there's just so many aspects to what you do. So let's start with the first thing. What inspired you to start Your Own Girl Friday?
Well, it's actually an interesting story. One of my dogs had an operation that was supposed to be a routine operation. And unfortunately, they paralyzed him from the neck down.
Oh, no.
So, the company at the time I worked for gave me a chance to stay home and take care of him to teach him how to walk all over again. And during that time period, while I was staying home, everybody figured that I had nothing to do, so they gave me a list of things to do for them. So I was running around taking care of my dog, plus also running around, doing errands for everybody. And I thought, this could be an interesting business. And I've always been very good at time management, which is something I'm exceptionally well at. And organization and time management go hand in hand. So I came up with an idea during the housing boom to join Your Own Girl Friday as a tax write-off for real estate agents to give me as a gift to new people that moved into their homes to unpack them and organize them as they moved in. And it was 100% write-off for the real estate agent. So within the first 6 months, my business was booming because I keep up with all of the different people that were trying to get me to unpack them and organize them. And then I started advertising in the community newspaper groups. Basically, my slogan is, do you need a second pair of hands? Do you have projects that are left undone? And that is a very wide range that you can offer people. Plus my background in construction, legal, project management, marketing, and business, I can pretty much walk into any situation and go from driving people to cancer treatments, which I have clients that are going through cancer and they have me sit with them while they're doing the chemo. And we talk and we spend time together. I have clients that needed me to do their PR and marketing for their company. I had clients who wanted me to help them implement their business plans. Having a vast skill set put me in a very prime position in San Diego to have a concierge service that was very different than anything else anyone else was offering. And everybody else has gone out of business except me. I'm by referral base only, but because of the fact that I can do so much on my website, it lists everything that I can do. But I tell my clients, what I may start with you at the first time may not be what we end up doing 5 years from now. So it's an evolving business, and you have to have skill sets that evolve with your clients as well.
Well, that's a great point. Great point. And just as an aside, I'm from San Diego. I was actually born in Southern California, but I moved to Northern California, and then long story, but San Diego for a couple of years, met my starter husband, moved to Florida, and I've been in Florida ever since. So, but I do miss California, miss the weather. It's so humid here. Oh my gosh. Good for the skin, but nothing else.
San Diego. I don't know if I want to live anyplace else, but.
Yeah. Right. Wow. So tell us, because you started a business and obviously you knew you had certain skills, but starting a business even back then or anytime is not easy to do. And especially if you're not exactly sure what direction to take. So tell us some of the challenges that you faced when you first started. And then again, share maybe a couple of the successes.
Well, I think the challenges are always going to be trying to figure out how to make a living. So I think when I first started Your Own Girl Friday, I had to take a pay cut from my company. I was losing my pensions. I'm going to lose my health care insurance. I'm going to lose a lot when you start a business. You have to be able to know that you can survive on whatever income you're going to be able to make off of the type of business that you're going to be able that you're putting forth. So if you have, let's say in San Diego, a concierge service, a lot of people are not charging more than $35 or $45 an hour to do a concierge service. So the most that you're going to make probably somewhere between $70,000 and $90,000 a year. So if you have a mortgage, it's more than that. If you have a family of four, this is not the business for you. So it's knowing your market, knowing how much you can charge, what kind of skill sets you have, and seeing what everybody else is charging. I don't know if I ever had any failures in terms of maybe in the beginning, probably the biggest thing I had to learn was not to accept money 30 days later from the time I did the service. So I developed a program called the retainer program, where it was an incentive for my clients to pay me up front and buy a certain amount of hours from me. And so every time it got close to the end of their retainer, I would always email the client, let them know, keep them, you're 5 hours from the end. Do you want to do another retainer? I don't think I ever had a client in 9 years that didn't do a retainer. Everybody did a retainer. They were happy to do it. They understood. I don't want to go after people for money. So I think probably in the beginning, the first couple of months, that's when I had to learn, was because I was flagging people down to pay me. And I don't ever want to be in that type of a situation. I think if you have a service and you know you have a service, then you should be paying the service. So I also... one of the greatest challenges for me was putting a value as to what I can do, because it is so different. I can switch on a dime, and some people, the business side of it is going to be a lot more expensive than $40 an hour. So it's separating the business side of, okay, this is going to be $50 an hour. This is going to be $2,500 a month to $4,000 a month if you want PR, marketing, brand development. And then learning social media was probably the biggest challenge for me. I have rejected it ever since it started. I still, I'm not sure about the revenue aspect of it. So for me, social media really strictly is business only. I don't think anybody really, my clients want to see me hanging out in a bar drinking something. So I just keep it I keep my boundaries set very simply, so that when my clients go to my website, they see only my work. They see what I've accomplished. They see how I'm accomplishing it, and they see how long it takes me to get things done. So I think, and my successes in the millions. I mean, it just, I would say the one biggest thing that I didn't anticipate was the personal side of this business. I have always been in the business sector, so everything's business, but I didn't take into account my clients' lives. I didn't take into account that they would want to have a personal connection to me, want to know me, want to hang out with me, want to be my friend. I just was like, okay, we're done. I'll see you. We're out of here. it's a walking, you know, having your boundaries set to where you're taking money from somebody and providing a service for them. And if they're not happy with it, it affects the friendship. So I've always tried to keep everything separate. And I think I've done a really nice job in maintaining friendships plus a business relationship with my clients. I think they would say that was probably the number one thing, is they trust me 100%. I do everything I say I'm going to do, and I live by it. So that's probably my biggest success.
Well, I think that's important, and it says a lot about, well, the fact that you've had in the type of business you're in, I'm assuming that there's a lot of turnover too. For various reasons, either because they can't find clients or because they don't realize how hard of work it is, you know, and that you've got to be a Jane of all trades. It's pretty amazing what you've accomplished.
Same clients that I've had for 8 years, they've never gone anywhere. So,
and that says a lot for you and the kind of service that you provide. And I think that's, and I love what you said about your boundaries on social media. I totally agree. I rarely post anything personal. If I do, I only try to do it to add value. I'm not one of those people who post selfies a lot or anything. Maybe once every couple months if I'm with my friends or something and they want to do it. But I totally agree with you, because we're professionals. We have to put ourselves and I think anybody who's in business, either for themselves or working for someone else, really needs to think about, you know, social media. Once it's there for life. So you really do have to be very careful in what you do. So I applaud you for the fact that you've learned how to manage it for your business. It's really important.
Well, I think in terms of social media, and I tell this with all my clients who do brand development, I want one page for personal and I want one page for professional. On the professional page, I don't want to see anything other than your work. And it just works so that when I'm marketing them to somebody, I could send them to the page and they don't have to go through a bunch of stuff to find out what the actual work is. And I think for the older generation, because I'm 50, so I consider myself an older generation, social media can be tricky, because how people word things doesn't necessarily translate into what they're actually doing. So, I'm a big person in terms of, I actually read people's social media pages. I'm looking at websites. I'm Googling their name. If I can't find anything, then I know you're not doing anything.
Right. Well, and I think with social media, it's hard to read intent. And what we intend sometimes when we write on social media is not necessarily what translates when the other person is reading it. And that's a really difficult thing for some people to understand, because some people speak the way they talk. I mean, write the way they speak. And that doesn't always work when you're writing on social media, because everybody interprets it differently. So we can talk about social media all day, but I really want to get into some of the other things that you've done. So let's talk about the second business you started as a fashion designer. And by the way, I have been designing Barbie doll fashion since I was 11. And that's the connection between you and I. I don't really do it for anybody else, although I'm a pretty darn good seamstress if I have to be. But I've always loved fashion design, and it's something I always wanted to do, but I just felt like a lot of competition. I wasn't in the right place for it. I mean, South Florida is like, we've got the design district that's just amazing, but it wasn't the group of people that I necessarily were around a lot. So for me, it was a I just felt like I didn't want to break into that industry. So how did you decide to become a fashion designer and start another business?
You know, with Your Own Girl Friday going and having the business and the marketing background, I actually had a friend of mine who was passing away from ovarian cancer, and she was passing away from ovarian cancer, and she told me, she said, you know, I think that you need to do one fashion show and get it over with and get it out of your system. So it was never something that I intended to do on a long period basis, you know, because you really need to have millions behind you. You need to have investors. You need to have a team. There's strategy. A lot of stuff that's involved in actually being a fashion designer. You have two choices. You could be a custom designer or you're going to be a ready-to-wear designer. If you're a custom designer, that's a very easy thing to do. You can set up a small little shop in San Diego and you could do 5 or 6 dresses a year and be done with it. I did my first fashion show, and from there, it just took off from people wanting to have me participate in doing Emmys, Grammys, and it got a little ahead of me. It got a little too much. I wasn't running it as a business. I was running it more as a hobby, and I think that it got to the point where I either had to really buckle down, go get a major investor or invest, you know, millions of my own money and do ready to wear and get it into retail stores. And so I put it on hold for about 1.5 years. It's been on hold for me to make the decision because I'm just not sure that I want to devote 100% of my time to something. I have friends that are very big designers that are in Paris and Dubai, and they live for it. It's the only thing that they've got going on in their lives. They don't want to do anything else other than that. And it's a struggle. It's time consuming. It's got a lot of stuff involved in it. I'm not there. I'm not there with it. I enjoyed it. I accomplished my dream, which was to have a dress at the Oscars. I did it. And I'm just, yeah. I mean, at the Oscars, the Emmys, I got to go to the Emmys 3 times in a row just because.
So who wore that dress? Tell us about that dress.
I actually designed it for the producers of the Oscars. So They contacted me. And what was very interesting about how they contacted me was they went through my social media feed to figure out whether or not I was somebody they wanted to work with. So they watched me for 3 months before they ever contacted me. And then as a bonus, they allow me to come and bring 2 models wearing my clothes, and they place my models throughout the audience. So my models had a great time in my clothes. They're on television. They're, you know, they're attending the red carpets. It was fun. At a certain point, you either have to go higher. You can't stay the same. I'm not the kind of person that can stay doing the same thing over and over and over again. So it's either that I go into a store. I had 7 boutiques in Europe that were interested in my clothes, and I was starting to design everything, and the big mistake that I made was I didn't understand about whether or not you can have certain fabrics leaving the country and entering other countries. Compliance letters is what they're called, and I bought all my clothes from dealers in Los Angeles that didn't have the compliance letters. So that set me back by 1 year. And by that point, I was exhausted. I didn't want to go through it anymore. I'm trying to find a fabric house that can give me compliance letters that will adhere to international laws. Very, very difficult in the level to which I wanted to start my first collection. So the boutiques are there. They're waiting for me. Anytime I'm ready, they're there. The contacts are there. The networks are there. So, you know.
You could just design 1 beautiful gown a year for someone really famous and sell it for a lot of money. These women spend a fortune on those clothes. And how wonderful would that be? Because no one would have your design but one person. You know, you see a lot of Bob Mackies, and I don't know. I'm going to name drop people. I have no idea who I'm talking about. Vera Wang. I know a few of the designers. And, you know, but they're the ones that everybody's wearing. So having a Stacey Blanchett, wow! I want one custom design. I understand. Yeah. So let's talk about another subject that I know you love to do. Both of us. I'm a big writer. I've been writing for years. Let's talk about writing. I mean, that's probably a big leap from being a concierge and then a fashion designer to writing. How did you know that writing was your ultimate calling?
Well, you know, I don't know if I think it's my ultimate calling. What I think that I decided to do was I wanted to brand Blanchet Designs, and the only way to brand Blanchet Designs is to get out in the mass media. I knew I can write, so I have a lot of networks and contacts of people who are willing to sit down and have me interview them. And my interviews are always about business. I want to know how people who are professionals that have made it, make it. I want to know the real story. Right. I want to know, you know, like, what are they using? What are their methods? What is communication? You know, how important is networking? And what is real networking? Not, you know, I've got 5,000 friends on Facebook and I've got a network. You don't have a network just because you have 5,000 friends on Facebook. So writing was a great way for me to hone my skills and develop relationships with editors around the world. And I started submitting my pieces to fashion magazines all over the world. And then I got to know all the editors. So the editors will come to me and say, Stacey, do you have anything? Can you recommend somebody? One of the things that magazines are dying for is content. They can't. Good writers, especially fashion writing is very, very difficult. I am not a fashion writer, and I call myself an interviewer because I think somebody who can sit down and write an article is very different than somebody who can write an interview. And so my strength really is in interviewing and taking a story from the top and bringing people into the interviewing and let the interviewer speak, because the subject really is the person you're talking to. It's not me. No one cares about me. So I don't put myself front and center. I put myself in the position where I'm so excited to interview this person because I'm going to learn something and I'm going to take you on this journey with me. And this is what I want to teach you. And because of that, the network that I have is huge in terms of getting people to want to work with me, do things with me. And so when I decided to join Trend Privé magazine as a senior editor, they asked me if I wanted my own team. And I said, yes. So I put together my team of writers in Paris. I put together my team of writers in Dubai. I put together my team of writers here in Los Angeles. And we can do beauty, fashion, lifestyle, and all kinds of stuff. And I really, I'm just excited about the fact that I can bring so much to the table in terms of my writing and my journalism. And one of the things that I'm going to be doing with Trend Privé is I'm starting a web series this year. So I'm taking my interviews video. We're actually having a full production. So I've got cameramen, I've got hair and makeup team, and we're going to be interviewing people. My first six interviews are already set for this month and next month. People that are in the industry and learn about how it is that they made what they were able to accomplish. And I'm really excited because that's where my writing skills will come into my journalism skills in the interviews.
That's fabulous. And you could actually, now that you know about Blab, you could actually interview people you can't get to in person, that can't come to your studio or be interviewed in person that you might want to interview. So, you know, keep that in mind. Even though it's a free platform, it's a pretty cool, tool. When you do the interview, you can record it. Then they send you a link to download it. You can upload it to YouTube. You can share it as a podcast. There's a lot of different things you can do to repurpose these interviews. Now, we're not talking high tech, high quality. You know, obviously you can see it's pretty low tech. Lighting is sometimes an issue with my guests, including mine today. For some reason, seems very dark in terms of what it normally is. I have to sit close to the computer so you can see my face. But those are I love the fact that there's so many tools that we can use. And I agree with you, interviewing other people, it's about them. That's why I try to find really great people and interview, because I think that not only will my guests learn something, but I learn something. And who doesn't want to meet people all over the world anyway? So I think what you're doing is fabulous. I'm going to be watching you and stalking you on social media.
I'm not sure if you stalk me on social media. I'm not on social media. That's the best part about it. It's like, you know, one of the reasons why I don't want to do Twitter or Instagram is because you can't block what the content is on the page. So
that's true. I'm not on Instagram.
You don't put my name on anything right. That I can't control. And so, I mean, a lot of people think it's a really big problem for me not being able to do that. They think I would go, you know, do a lot better if I was on there. I actually disagree. I'm not sure. And as far as using this in terms of interviewing, it can be used, but for our purposes, we have television that's interested in our series. So,
oh, no, it wouldn't work for television. I'm thinking like more like teasers and trailers, you know, small snippets where you could do a promotion to say, by the way, coming soon to a television near you or a theater. I don't know. I just think that there's some possibilities. And I'm one of those early adopters. I like trying things. And I also have ADD. Yeah. So I lose interest quickly, you know. You know, when we last spoke via Facebook, because I know you're on Facebook and I love what you do. It's perfect. You mentioned the Oscars and that you were going to attend, you were attending the Elton John concert and the after party. So tell us what that was like, because I think everybody wants to know about that.
We actually were up there for the weekend. I had business meetings and we did not go to the Oscars. We went to the Elton John Oscar viewing party and it just so happened that Elton John played for the Oscar viewing party. There was probably about 900 people there, which sounds like it would be a huge party. But when you're there, it's really not as big as you would think it was. I was actually very surprised. This is my first year going. I worked with the Elton John Foundation on it. I had very low expectations because I'm not a celebrity as to how things would be. But they couldn't have been nicer. They were... just class all the way. They put me right next to the stage. So our seating was literally me and 10 feet was Elton John. And he was, I was shocked. I really was absolutely shocked. I was shocked at, you know, everybody wants me to take pictures when I go to these things, but people don't understand is that when you're there, it's totally inappropriate to whip out the camera and ask celebrities to stop and take a selfie with them. First of all, I'm not that kind of a person. I don't do selfies. So it's not in my DNA to really go up and ask people to do that. So it makes it very comfortable for me to be sitting there. I spent the first half hour of the party with Melanie Griffin, and we were watching the red carpet arrivals. And, I mean, she looks every bit of movie star that she is. And when they walk in, I mean, Mariah Carey was there, Steven Tyler was there, Gene Simmons was there, Ellen DeGeneres was there. I sat in line with Ellen's wife and several other people. When you're in the line for the women's room, that's really where you want to be because the restroom. They never give enough restrooms for the women. I just cannot, explain this. And when we left the party, one of the security details escorted us out and flagged down a taxi for us. And I was really, we were just, they were really bent over backwards to the point to the gentleman that I was working with at the Elton John Foundation sent me an email asking me if I made it back to the hotel safely. It makes me, my secret article that I've been wanting to do is an article called The Lost Art Form of Customer Service for my magazine. And from the start, we stayed at the Beverly Hills Hotel and, there's tons of celebrities there. They tell you no photographs. So when you get there, it tells you, please do not take photographs, especially by the phone, by the pool. They do not want you bothering anybody. I was swimming in the pool with the guy who wrote The Revenant, the movie Leonardo DiCaprio. My last day there, I was down the pool with Quentin Tarantino and Michael Madsen. It was just the three of us. So, it's an incredible experience. It's a different kind of a world. But I try when I'm up in Hollywood and I'm doing a lot of these, when I'm doing a lot of these types of events and I'm around celebrities, I don't treat them like celebrities. To me, they're just people. And I think that makes a big difference as to why I get invited. I'm not in the industry, so they're not threatened by me. I'm not trying to be an actress. I don't want to be famous. They know I'm not writing anything about them that's going to be me. So it just makes it easy for me to navigate through that world. And I had a blast. I would highly recommend it. It's extremely expensive to do the Elton John party. Most people cannot afford $10,000 a ticket. So, that's, again, and they do that for a reason, is to raise.
Oh, sure. They want to make sure that the people who can afford it will be there and not the ones that are going to cause problems, maybe.
Or ask, you know, try to get a job from somebody. I mean, these, you know, I mean, this is their one night. And you know, even when I went to the Oscars, when I was sitting on the floor of the Emmys, the Primetime Emmy Awards, I sat with the cast of Modern Family the first year, the whole time I was there. It is completely inappropriate to bring out your phone and ask to take a picture while you're down there sitting with them. So I just enjoyed the moment. I'm in it. I'm, you know, they invited me back to see one of their screenings of the Modern Family. And I went to their set and watched them do it. And they were just very, very, I've never had an unpleasant experience. Never, not once. I don't have any.
So, you know, we're almost out of time, but I'm going to ask you two more quick questions. The first one is if you had, and I wish we could chat. I mean, obviously, when people hear this, I'm also like you. I'm not really a starstruck type person. I do have a lot of respect for people who work so hard because I think it's a hard job. I really do. I have a friend who's got children in California who are struggling to be, you know, actors and actresses. And I know it's not easy. Once you make it, it's great, but it does take a lot of work. And not everybody makes it. So, you know, but that's in any industry, wouldn't you say? I mean, think about it. If you think about fashion design, how many fashion designers are there out there, but how many could you name on one hand, you know? So that's, again, it's all relative. But the one question I have is, if you had it to do over again, what, if anything, would you do differently, Stacey?
Wow. I have to go all the way back to when I was 21 and I graduated from FIT. And I made the decision not to stay in New York and come back to San Diego. I think that was a game changer. I think I thought I had time. I think everybody thinks they have time. I think that the regrets that most people have in life are all the regrets you do in your early 20s because you don't understand that these are things you can't get back. If I had stayed in New York, I think, you know, who knows? Yeah. But it's the one thing that always haunted me. I think the opportunities would have been greater in New York for me to have explored the creative side. I think going into fashion designing now with so much business behind me takes away the creativity of it because you're looking at things very practical now. I think if I were young and naive, I'd meet me to an apartment in New York and I would be out every night trying to hustle and work for Calvin Klein. I mean, I don't know, but that would probably be the one thing that I would have done over was I would have really tried and made an effort to stay in New York and maybe have gone to Paris if possible. I mean, Paris is very, very difficult, but New York would have been would have been possible getting a room with five people, so to speak, you know, but I have friends that stayed in New York and worked in the industry and they never made any money and they were struggling all the way through their 30s and their 40s. That's just not me. I didn't want to do that. I just don't think it's worth it. And but it may be worth it for other people, but that would be my one regret was that I should have stayed.
But then again, you may not be who you are today. So it's you know, it's like one of those yin or yang things and in life and you just never know what trajectory your life is going to take through all of the choices that we make. You know, I love the question and it would have been the question I asked and I thought about it afterwards is what would your older self tell your younger self? And it sounds to me it would said stay in New York.
A friend of mine who once told me that you can never look backwards because in hindsight you've made it with the best information possible. So I've always tried, if my older self would tell my younger self, don't look back. It's my one rule. I never go backwards. So I don't go backwards even to gain momentum. I will just stand still until I gain momentum. I don't believe in looking backwards. Mistakes are mistakes. Own them. Move on from them. If you've hurt people, say you're sorry. Move on from it. Hopefully that's good enough. If it's not good enough, then figure out what's good enough. But you know, there's certain actions that you have to make decisions on, but I think that, you know, by the time you get into your 40s and your 50s, you just don't care. I mean, you're just happy. You're just content with, you know, making it.
And I'm up here. I'm older than you, so I get it.
You know who you are. It is what it is. It's, you know, you're settled. So I don't know. Your 20s and your 30s are meant for that. Make a ton of Make them. Just live with them.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, then it makes you a better person in the long run. So what's next for Stacey Blanchet?
You know, I think most of my time now is going to be spent doing the web series. That requires a lot of research. Our magazine gives me a very big platform to interview all varieties. So since we are a vegan magazine and we don't promote any type of cruelty towards animals or women, I feel that I have a very wide range. So my first guest would be Bobbi Leonard, who has the number one skincare line in the United States, which is plant-based. The second guest is Jane Velez Mitchell, and she hosts a show on CNN, but she's also an animal rights activist. And I want to ask her how social media helps her and doesn't help her. You know, I personally tune out of all the animal videos that are out there of animals being slaughtered. So is it helping me? Yeah. Is that hurting her cause or helping her cause? Our third guest is going to be Sherry Belafonte, and I'm going to talk to her about her father and civil rights. And my fourth guest is Jason Edmonds, and he is a music producer and the nephew of Babyface, and he's got Snoop Dogg, Macy Gray, and he's now back together with his band and touring the United States, and they just got done playing the BET Awards. And I want to talk to him about the business of the music business. You know, where do you make your money now? How do albums make money? How do music artists make money if you're in management? And and then our fifth guest is in April, and it's a restaurant entrepreneur. He owns 6 restaurants, and this guy's rock and roll all the way. And he's also does a lot for women who are abused. So, yeah, our platform has a humanitarian site. So we donate 70% of all of our profits to nonprofits.
Wow. I cannot wait to see it. So tell us how we can see the show and how we can contact you, because we are running out of time. And I am so sorry.
Yeah.
We had it.
Yeah, the show we're hoping will be finished, because there's a lot of editing that we have to do once we do the interviews. The show will not air till sometime late spring. It will air on our website, trendprivé.com, www.trendprivé.com. We'll have a bunch of promotions. It's called In the Know is the name of our show. It's sort of like In the Know, so that you know what's going on. And people can reach me at stacyblanchet.com, like my name.
So Trend Privé is T-R-E-N-D-P-R-E-V-E.
It's T-R-E-N-D-P-R-I-V-E.com. And we're based out of
Germany. Okay. And then the other one is Stacey Blanchet.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm writing it in the text over here, so we have it for anybody who watches the replay as well. Stacey, I wish we had more time. Maybe we can have you back after your show airs and you've had a few under your belt. You're just fascinating. So I want to thank you for, first of all, taking so much time out of your busy day to try to figure out this whole blab. And you did it. Yay. So thank you very much for that. I should have put Stacey Blanchet. Did I spell her right? Blanchet.
Yes, you did.
.com. Okay, there we go. All right. So again, thank you, Stacey Blanchet, for being our guest today. My name is Heidi Richards Mooney. You've been tuning into the Entrepreneur Show. And be sure to check out Stacey at trendprivé.com and stacyblanchet.com. Thank you all and have a wonderful day. Thank you, Stacey. All right, you're welcome. Bye-bye.